Ah, oh boy, does it sound good. It's great to hear that, isn't it? A little jingle. This isn't an ordinary Monday, I can tell you that much. Welcome into a special Blue Jays edition of Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Daniele Franceschi with you alongside my friend and yours, Sho Ali. Sho, what's going on?
What's up? Some news to discuss, finally. I can't believe it. I never thought this day would come again, honestly, after a certain point. But it has.
Hard to believe, but yes, indeed. Here we are. For those of you listening on radio, you just had the opportunity to hear from Blair and Barker, an impromptu hour-long edition of the show. You can obviously download their podcast wherever you get your pods. The reaction to the Blue Jays signing one Anthony Santander, a 5-year deal worth $92.5 million guaranteed. It could become a 6-year deal. There's a 6-year option included that would extend the deal up to $110 million, opt out after 3 years. But in saying all that, Joe, ultimately, the Jays get the big bat that they've been chasing, that fans have been yearning for seemingly not just this offseason, but years now, wanting to supplement the lineup in a meaningful way. They get that in a player that is 30 years old, coming off a career year with 44 homers for the Baltimore Orioles in 2024. When you saw the news come down earlier today, I think in part because we're so conditioned to the fact that things don't happen or haven't happened very frequently, bit surprising. Like it was like, oh, wow, this is cool. This is fun. What was your initial, what were some of the initial thoughts that ran through your head when you saw this deal pop up on the timeline?
You know, when Anthony Santander's name came down in our email, because I saw the way I saw it wasn't on social media. I was getting ready for some other shows. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it come down in like the corporate email chain. And I thought to myself, okay, you know what? Finally. And I joked earlier that like, oh man, I can't believe they found someone to take their money. But I think more than anything, it's because I think the Blue Jays had been so heavily linked to Santander for weeks now, right? And then when all the Roki Sasaki news were coming in, I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but when all that happened, it put everything on hold, right? Like it put everything the Jays were doing outside of Sasaki Mania, the Sasaki sweepstakes, put that completely on hold. And I thought, man, like I know they work on these deals concurrently. It's not like they just do them one at a time in silos. Like they're doing a million things. A lot of plates are spinning for every team. That's just how every team and every sport, much less Major League Baseball, operates. They're not just doing everything at one at a time. So I thought to myself, okay, it's kind of bizarre. We haven't heard a single peep out of Santander, but they had that, and Mark Boffo, our producer, had shown me this actually the week prior, but there was that Instagram reel of Alek Manoah doing some kind of workout. I don't know if you saw this, and like walking behind him in the reel as he was throwing balls against the wall or whatever was Anthony Santander.
Oh, really?
They were hanging out. And then the caption was like, what do you think I think it was like, what do you think I said to Santander, or what should I say to Santander? And then like what was the music that was playing over the Instagram reel was O Canada. And so I was like, all right, like this is probably going to get done. So my question was, when I saw the news that, oh, Morosi saying that the deal is done with Santander, I thought to myself, all right, I'm not surprised, but how much money is this going to cost the Blue Jays? After they lost out in public fashion and they kind of embarrassed themselves, the whole Miles Straw thing, again, which we can talk about, I kind of thought to myself, like, what is this going to cost them? Is this going to cost them an arm and a leg? And that it's 5 years, $92.5 million, and they're opt-outs, and it can be 6 years, and we can, continue discussing that. I got to say, it's a tidy piece of business. 5 years, $92.5 million, yeah. That is not something I hate whatsoever. Could that deal age poorly when you're 30 and if you're 35 by the end of it, if he doesn't opt out? Sure. Like, that's definitely possible. But I don't know. I mean, for getting a player like Santander for less than $20 million a year, I think that's a nice piece of business.
I would concur. I also think we're at a point with this franchise, with the state of the roster, where we can't complain about term and price. Like, we're beyond that, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's whatever works. And there is immense pressure.
If they paid him like $300 million,
different story.
Like,
okay.
What are they doing?
Yeah,
right?
Different story. But if we're saying the difference between, and it ends up being 18.5
right
per year. But if it was instead of 18.5, hypothetically, let's say it was, I don't know, 23 or 22.5, would I be sitting here saying, you know, that's a little rich for my money, for my blood? No, because they are in a position where, sadly, they are desperate. And they understand there is urgency to try and make something happen here. Yeah. Because you are entering a season where you only have 1 year contractually left of Vlad and Bo, and the future beyond that is so murky. Like, even with this deal, show now, if you look at their sort of payroll, projected payroll for future years beyond this season, 2025, if we went to the 2026 Blue Jays payroll, there are nine guys under contract. Nine.
It's not a lot of people.
That's not a lot. So it tells you all you need to know about where things are right now. And regardless, so we mentioned it, 18 and a half per year. It's 5 years, 92.5 with all the, with an opt out baked in plus the option year. It's a club option, by the way, for the 6 year. For context, where this sort of places him, if you look at other quote unquote sluggers or outfielders, and by the way, Santander, yes, he could DH for this team a little bit, but ultimately he has predominantly played in the outfield in his career, corner outfield, specifically right field for him. But if we look at how that compares in terms of AAV to other guys around the sport,
okay,
that are in a similar vein, like similar positions and share those elements of similarity within it, he's basically slots in right between Masataka Yoshida and Teoscar Hernandez. And if you ask the Boston Red Sox,
that's terrible, honestly,
I'm sure the Red Sox would probably want to maybe redo the Yoshida situation.
Yeah, there are talks coming out of Boston that they're trying to trade Masataka Yoshida, or trying to like dump that contract, which is crazy, honestly.
This is, so he slots in right between those two guys. Right. And by the way, it's not even an onerous contract. It's not like Yoshida and Teoscar are top 10 in terms of highest paid players at their position. No, we're talking 17, 18, and 19 on the list of highest paid outfielders in the sport. So by that metric alone, this is a fairly tidy piece of business for a team that didn't necessarily have a ton of leverage going into this process because they hadn't landed anybody. They just got spurned by Roki Sasaki, and yet this still ends up being really reasonable from a financial perspective and clearly helps your baseball team.
There's deferred money in here as well, so I guess not only the Dodgers can use deferred money to entice free agents there, so that's definitely a big bonus. So maybe it's not bad for baseball to be able to defer money. Maybe it's just the amount, considering how much money the Dodgers have deferred. I jest. I'm mostly saying that in tongue-in-cheek. But it is pretty funny that you think about what it took rumor-wise to get Santander to actually put a signature on the contract, because if you remember, Daniele, what, like 2 weeks ago at this point, the rumor was that Santander was going to sign, or let me rephrase, the rumor was that the Blue Jays had offered him, not that he was going to sign, but the Blue Jays had offered him $82 million over 4 years, and that he was looking for more money and more term. And so in the end, even though this deal does end up as a 92.5 over five in terms of dollars over years, I mean, 82.5, 92.5. They want the extra year to lock him in, but they added, you mentioned the opt-out. I think the opt-out structure of this, I find really interesting, right? Because you can opt out after the third year of this deal. The club can void that opt-out by picking up the team option in 2030, which would make it a six-year deal. So, like, essentially, if he is still hitting dingers at a prodigious rate in 3 years, you would think he would just opt out and try and make more than $18 million a year on a somewhat shorter-term deal with whoever, right? Maybe it's with the Blue Jays, maybe with someone else. But if he's still playing really well at age 33, age 34, he'll probably be able to cash in for $20 million a year and make a couple more million extra dollars. And if not, he'll stay a Blue Jay until he probably is close to retirement, essentially. And again, those kind of deals don't generally age well. We can acknowledge that, especially when you get into your mid-30s, but which is where I am in life, so you know, it doesn't bode well for me necessarily. But I'm also not getting paid $100 million, yes, right? So that's the give and take, I suppose, a little bit. But yeah, I do think ultimately the opt out of this makes it really interesting. But even though you had to give the extra year onto this deal to make him sign, honestly, it's still not that terrible. Again, I don't think it's enough to change fans' perceptions of this team. I really don't think so. But I do believe it's a start if they can get something else going here.
That's the key. Now, maybe we got Pete Alonso coming down the track or Alex Bregman even, then people say, okay, all right, now we got a team. I joked with you too earlier before the show where I said, see, now if Sasaki would have landed, then you got Roki. And 2 days later, you pick up and land Santander. Now we're talking. Yeah, now we got a team happening here. There's still more work to be done. I think people are still obviously very curious about what's going to happen with Vlad. there's a level of fascination there, obviously. Is it going to work out? Are they going to find common ground on an extension, or are we going to reach February 18th and that's that? And then we are all sitting resigned to the reality that he's more than likely going to hit the market once the season concludes. But if they can find a way over these next two and a half weeks here to do something else that is pretty impactful and significant, it would go a long way in terms of, I don't want to even say reestablishing goodwill, but building some ounce of goodwill so that people can feel good and excited about what's happening with this baseball team. By the way, text line is open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. Standard message and data rates apply. And also, we're going to open up the phone lines for everybody, because I know, I'm sure there are plenty of Blue Jays fans out there that are really, really eager to talk about what this offseason has been, this signing in particular, and maybe some hopes and aspirations for what might still be to come with less than a month away from spring training. Phone number to call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Okay, show. When it comes to, and I wanted to give this background as well, third biggest contract in Blue Jays history, this signing ends up being. Springer, of course, number one. Six years.
After that?
Yeah, six years, 150 for Springer. Number two, Kevin Gausman. Yeah. 5 years, 110. And now Anthony Santander, the third richest deal in Blue Jays history. Do you think this does anything in terms of changing the optics or the perception externally of what this offseason had represented up until this point? And by that, I mean, now that the Jays have finally hit on somebody, can guys that are still lingering in the market, maybe it is the most marquee names, which are Alonso and Bregman, but perhaps it's other guys that we aren't even thinking about that are still on the periphery that could, in theory, help this team.
Profar
is a good one. Does it change their perception of this team and what the ceiling might look like, and maybe make it more enticing for them to say, yeah, you know what, the Blue Jays, if they're offering me the same money as, I don't know, you know, the A's or Detroit or Kansas City, maybe I can look at all those situations, break it down, and I can find reasons why the Blue Jays are compelling. Does it change anything on that front?
Mainly for fans, you mean, or for players?
No, I think even for the players, because that's the one thing I've been curious about throughout this process, was we talk a lot about the external perception from a fan point of view.
Right, right.
But how about the players around the sport? Whether it's the guys in this clubhouse right now or the guys that are on the outside looking in, they're all human beings. They have conversations every day. What is that, the perception of the Blue Jays like right now? And does something like this actually maybe help the Jays in their ability to recruit and pursue other players?
You know, I have long believed that money will get any player to do pretty much anything. I've long believed that, right? And I know that rings a little hollow, let's say, for the Blue Jays this season in particular, because, you know, when the money was the same and the situations were not, then teams take the situation over the money, right? Or not over the money, but like that's the deciding factor instead of the money. And you look no further than Sasaki, for example, for a situation like that. Teoscar Hernandez, for example, signing, again, like a shorter term, but generally speaking, AAV-wise, pretty similar to what Santander got. He had a heavy amount of deferrals as well. That whole thing with Teo I thought was really interesting, too, because he deferred a lot of money and then got all that money back in a signing bonus, essentially, which is what the Dodgers can do in terms of flexing their specific financial might. But anyways, the point being, to answer your question about does it change things for players, I'll say this. I don't think it does, but I do wonder if, in the sense that if the Blue Jays are willing, they might have to do this, to go the extra mile, the extra year, or different structured in terms of opt-outs and so on, and other teams are not willing to do that, that might end up being the difference maker. And the reality is the Blue Jays might have to do that because, again, I've said this to many people before. I've said this to Blair, I've said this to Keegan, and I've said this to you. But I really don't necessarily believe that truly Canada, Toronto, playing here is that much different than playing in most cities that are not New York or Los Angeles, essentially. Outside of those two places, playing here is probably better than playing, I would say, probably anywhere else in Major League Baseball. But I don't think the players view it that way, right? And maybe that's not the case for international players, maybe players from Japan and players from Latin America and from different parts of the world that are not America. Maybe they view it a little differently, and I think that probably there's some truth to that. But, yeah, I mean, if the Blue Jays are willing to go the extra mile, I mean, look, if there haven't been that many big-time deals done where guys who are in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, are getting deals that take them into their mid-30s, right? So if that's the case, then if the Blue Jays are willing to do that, they might have a little bit of an advantage over other people. Now, the other part of it is, are they willing to do that for the guys they really want? Because it kind of feels like they were forced into doing it with Santander because they had no choice after what happened with Sasaki.
Well, it depends how you look at it because, so there's also, in a way, this is giving credence to the Blue Jays and their level of discipline when it comes to internal valuations. You hear that all the time, especially from the guys in this market that cover the team regularly, Shy, BNS. They're all very intimately familiar with how the Jays try and be super disciplined, which made Friday more bizarre in terms of the Miles Straw trade. Why. It was because it didn't feel like a really measured, calculated move, right? But this one does, because this is almost them. We have to almost give them credit for being patient on this. Like, this deal wasn't on the table for them in November, and if they or December. And if they went out first week of December at the winter meetings and said, we need to make a splash, guys. Let's go. We want Santander. We wanted them all. Let's go get him. That price tag, should they, or provided they would have actually signed him then, probably would have been significantly higher.
Yeah.
It's just because the market unfolded in this manner. Same with Jeff Hoffman. Like, everybody can joke about, it took two teams to not want the guy to have their deals fall through for the Blue Jays to finally jump in and get it done. But that's how this front office operates. It's when the deal and the number meets their criteria, then they're going to pull the trigger on it.
And you know what, too? I also think the Santander deal is the first one. I mean, again, the Blue Jays have just not made very many deals this offseason, period. I do think it's the first deal where fans can look at it and say, man, I kind of feel good about this, right? Because every other deal that has happened has come with some little
caveat.
Yeah, caveat's a great word, right? It come with something just to make you doubt it or feel annoyed by it. Like, Jeff Hoffman, I loved the signing. And then it was like, oh, but they failed the physical. Oh, he also failed the physical in this other place. So you're like, oh, man. Like, that, it kind of takes the shine off it to a certain extent, right? You think they're going to get Sasaki. Again, I'll say this, hand up, I thought he was always going to Los Angeles. But, like, I think the acquiring Miles Straw made you feel like there's a real chance there. They not only not get Sasaki, but they're stuck with Miles Straw at this inflated salary. You don't feel great about that, even though that was kind of a nothing move in the first place. And then even the Andrés Giménez thing, it's like, you know what, Andrés Giménez was great, but at the same time, you know, it's like another, it's more of the same, right? It's, oh, well, this doesn't really solve any of the problems we've all been collectively saying they have. So, I don't know. It's just one of those, it's one of those things where it's the first time basically since the season ended that you can say, oh, man, this actually feels like markedly different in some way.
All right, why don't we hit the phone lines? Again, phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590. On your cell phone. Jason from Connecticut, all the way from the U.S. of A, joining us. Jason, how's it going, man?
Guys, doing good. And, I think, you know, look, I think today that I'm excited about this move. I think they get, you know, a switch hitting powerful outfielder. And I think that, you know, although Friday was disappointing with that whole Miles Straw thing getting the international money, I think what's next. And if the Jays, I think what I would do is sign Alonso. I like him better than Bregman. I think if, you know, and it kind of gives the Jays some safeguards, because if they can't re-sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr., then you know what? You have a first baseman that you can have for the next 3 to 4 years in Alonso with a big, powerful bat. And if, let's face it, if Bo Bichette can bounce back this year and have a really good year, then I think the Jays would be in good shape, you know, with their lineup. And I think Jack Flaherty's probably the pitcher out there for the rotation if they can get. I think, again, from what I'm reading and hearing, it seems like he's willing to take a shorter deal. I like Flaherty a lot. I think if you can get Alonso and Flaherty, play ball, I think the Jays would be in good shape. So, guys, keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening.
Jason, before you go, Jason, real quick, I have to ask you. I only saw this the other day, but there was the news from Ben Nicholson-Smith that Bo Bichette, along with a couple others, was in the contingent of people that came up to Toronto. Like, they flew up from Florida to Toronto to greet Roky Sasaki. Now, I know the Sasaki thing didn't work out, obviously, that was not great. But I got to say, only because you mentioned Bo Bichette and him having a bounce back year, I was surprised that Bo, considering everyone says he has one foot out the door, actually did what he did for the franchise. Do you think that makes a huge difference for how you feel about Bo?
I do. I think that for Bo and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I think that they both obviously, Vladimir's going to be a free agent. Bo Bichette's got to kind of bounce back, I think, to kind of get back to what he was. And I think that Bo Bichette stays healthy, he's going to be motivated. And I think that even for the Jays, him having a good year, even if they have to trade him at the deadline, I think there's a lot of positives there. So I'm confident in Bo Bichette. I just think he's got to stay healthy, get back to being what he was. And I do think that was really good. I mean, it was him and a couple of those other players, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. that were up in Toronto. I think it was Chad Green was the
yep.
other one.
And Varsha.
So I think it shows actually really, really positive for the Jays that he did that he's all in. So we'll see. I mean, I'm optimistic. I think this move today was really a good start. And Alonzo Flaherty would be the next two big ones for us Jay fans. So let's see what happens.
Appreciate the call, Jason. Thanks so much. Jason from Connecticut. There we go. I think a lot of people share that sentiment, Show, in terms of if you can get, especially if you can get one more.
Yeah.
If you get one more,
I think so.
Big bat, somebody of repute that you can throw in there, you feel so much better. It's a good starting point. It's unfortunate it's January 20th and this is kind of the starting point, but nevertheless,
yeah,
it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah.
We got to keep that in mind. And it does sort of at least cushion the blow of what happened on Friday. It erases, in a weird way, that the disdain, the angst of what transpired on Friday, first with not landing Sasaki and then the trade that occurred because in theory they thought they might be getting him. All of that washes away, and it's kind of now replaced with a little bit of optimism, which is a good place to be for this team.
Do you see that Jack Flaherty tweet from the other day?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, it was like it was on Friday. Anyways, it was the last couple of days. And literally, it was just a GIF, and it was like a GIF of like some. It was from some movie, but it was like a guy sitting on like the curb, and he's like just looking at his watch, like waiting for something to happen. And I thought that was pretty funny because I'm like, man, even Jack Flaherty is waiting for stuff. Like we're waiting for stuff to happen. The media, the fans are waiting for stuff to happen, and the players are also waiting for stuff to happen. And Jack Flaherty, like, I think you can make the argument he's the most attractive remaining free agent starting pitcher. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I know Scherzer is out there. Mm-hmm. There are some rumors the Blue Jays are interested in Scherzer. I mean, there are rumors the Blue Jays are interested in every free agent under the sun.
Oh, that's a different topic altogether.
But still, like, Flaherty, I think, is the sexiest starting pitcher, and it's an obvious position of need. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be something. What did you think of what Jason said about Alonzo over Bregman? Because
I'm
with him too.
Yeah, fully on board.
Bregman kind of freaks me out with he had the elbow issue just this past season where he missed a couple weeks. And again, he's been pretty durable, so maybe that's a one-off. I mean, everyone gets injured. You're getting a little older. I understand you have a lot of wear and tear on the body, but I don't know. Maybe it's just that you play first base. It just feels like that's much easier to maintain than it is for literally anyone who plays third base. Even the worst third baseman, you're just going to have more wear and tear on the body. But I don't know. What do you think the likelihood of that is at this point?
I would prefer, to answer the first question, I would 100% prefer Alonzo over Bregman. I think the time and situation where Bregman will return the most value, where you're going to get, as any team that acquires him, gets the best ROI, is when October rolls around and you're playing potentially for an opportunity to compete for the World Series. If that is where you are as a team and as a franchise, if you're at that stage of your development and your competitive cycle, I would 100% be vying for Bregman's services because of the playoff pedigree, the experience, the two championships. But if you're a team like the Blue Jays, that while third base is a need, and I I've said it all along, almost jokingly in a way, I would be reluctant to go down the path of having Ernie Clement as your everyday third baseman again.
Right.
That being said, boy oh boy, I would actually feel a lot worse if the Blue Jays suddenly went out and did 6 years, $130 million on Alex Bregman. it would make me really uncomfortable because you're, in my estimation, he's not a guy that at this stage of his career, you're penciling him in as your cleanup hitter or as your five hole hitter and saying, go hit me 30 and 100 again every year. He's not that guy. He might give you the off year where he does that, but the consistency of that offensive production and the power is not, I just don't believe at this point, is still within him to do it year over year over year for even half the lifespan of the contract he's going to receive. Yeah. So if you're a team that's close and knocking on the door of trying to break through and win a World Series or get to ALCS, NLCS, then I would consider it. Not for the Blue Jays. Also, show, it's funny you mentioned it's a conversation between a third baseman and a first baseman right here in terms of primary positions. But with Alonso, I saw this pop up on my timeline before the show today. Vinny Pasquantino the other day was on Foul Territory and made a comment where he says, first basemen are undervalued. Right? Think about the best sluggers, best hitters in the sport.
He's trying to pump up his own value.
Sure. I don't blame him, show. Yeah, but think about how many really good first basemen there are. Guys that hit for power.
Yeah.
Guys that drive in runs. Even if your average is 240, 250, who does that sound like? Pete Alonso. Sure. So if you get into a market where, for whatever reason, his price, his value is slightly depreciated and diminished, go win. Go make that your win of the offseason.
Yeah.
Because I can assure you, I feel more confident about him being a 25 to 30 homer hitter for the next 5-6 years than I do about Bregman giving you 1 year of 35 and 100. By that metric alone, and knowing what your team needs, I'd be all in on Alonso over Bregman. And he might even be cheaper.
He might actually be cheaper because the rumor is that Bregman wants a longer-term deal. And I think Alonso also wants a longer-term deal. But, I mean, this is a Boris thing in negotiating through the media, certainly, and all agents do this. But there was the reports from earlier during the season that when Alonso was to hit free agency, he wanted like $200 million. It does not sound like Alonso's getting $200 million from anyone.
No.
Like, not the Mets, certainly, at this point. I mean, and then, there, of course, there were the reports from SNY and so on from last week that he rejected, like, a three-year, $66 million deal. And I'm like, okay, sure. If we've seen what Teoscar Hernandez has gotten, not a first baseman, I understand, but we saw what he's gotten. We just saw what Santander has gotten. I think it has, to a certain extent, just generally speaking, for players of this age, has set the market. And again, position matters. But if you're a first baseman who doesn't do a whole lot else but hit dingers, and hitting dingers is a big deal, but if that's kind of it, then I think there is probably a limit to a certain extent as to what you will get. So I think a lot of the discussions around, well, the Mets trade for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did seem to be driven in large part by the Mets trying to, like, put some pressure on Pete Alonso to lower his asking price. But I mean, there's a real possibility the Blue Jays, and again, this is a tidy piece of business today for Santander, there's a real possibility they go out there and they get another big bat. And I think you're right. I think Alonso might end up being cheaper than Bregman, especially if the Tigers go out and sign a Bregman, reunite him with AJ Hinch, right? So I don't know. I think I'd be fascinated to see that. There's a text here from there's some text here I wanted to go get ahead to. There's just one. I just wanted to make me laugh. It was just, when did we plan the parade?
I know. I saw
that's really funny. Look, that's what we only reserve that for the Leafs. Okay. I don't think anyone's thinking the Blue Jays are suddenly World Series contenders. I think it's just the sheer dearth of news has made everyone so desperate. And I mean, I don't think this necessarily makes the Blue Jays, you know, they're going to be the World Series favorites or even the favorites to win their own division, frankly, based on what the Yankees had already done. They had some tidy piece of work for them. Certainly the Red Sox making some changes as well. And the Rays are the Rays and the Orioles are the Orioles. But I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's okay to be excited when the Blue Jays do something exciting, especially that they didn't have to overpay for this.
Why not? Why not? Why don't we sneak in one more call here before we take a break? Eddie from Fort Erie joins us. He's been a staple on Jay's Talk, of course, for many, many years. Eddie, how's it going?
Pretty good. You guys?
Good.
We are doing well.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm very happy with the signing. You know, they've been trying so hard to get that big-time bat and, you know, and any other moves for that matter. And all the other ones I'm pretty happy with too, you know. And but I'm interested with Hoffman because I was thinking about this too because you guys were talking about him. I do wonder, though, if he and Garcia might be that closer by committee thing, because, you know, I'm sure that they're both going to get a chance at spring training to see what they do. So I'm kind of looking at that now. Another thing about Santander being on the Blue Jays, I'm glad that they have him now, more so because you saw guys like Varsho and Clement, you know, trying to do so much, you know, try to like, you know, help the team out and that sort of thing. And they were kind of like out of their comfort zone a little bit. But I really think now with Santander there, you're going to see like better production, maybe like better, hopefully some better play discipline from Dalton Varsho, like in a, like in the sixth or seventh spot of the lineup. And I really would like to see Clement batting behind Santander, because everybody knows that Clement can hit anything, as it was last year, you know, when he hit a couple of home runs, like they were really high, especially the one between his eyes against the Angels, which I still couldn't believe to this day that he did that. And I think if you put him there, that would be good too. And as far as Pete Alonso goes, you guys, I'm torn about this because they have to forfeit a draft pick to get Santander. And now if they sign Alonso, they'll have to forfeit another one. So I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if he's willing. I don't know if the Blue Jays are gonna do that again. You know, cough out two draft picks, but who knows? And if they do get Alonso, then maybe that kind of makes it a little clearer for them to trade Bo, or regardless, still trade Bo. I mean, like you said, there's still things going on, but I'm very excited for what's happening with the Blue Jays in this late part of the offseason before spring training.
Reason to be excited, Eddie. Good reason to be excited. Appreciate you calling in as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
There he goes, Eddie from Fort Erie. Staple on Jays Talk. I was going to make a snarky comment about the draft compensation. It's not like they draft well anyway. I mean, where's the?
I mean, even if
it's
they
the second
did,
highest draft pick. So yeah, Eddie is right. It does bear mentioning.
Yeah,
$500K of international signing bonus pool money is forfeited as a result of signing Santander. I guess there goes your $2 million coming in handy with the Miles Straw trade.
Yeah.
And also their second highest draft pick from this upcoming class will be forfeited as a compensation pick. Again, I think I'd much rather have Anthony Santander.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, same thing with Pete Alonso.
Basically,
I feel the same way.
Even if they had a great track record of drafting, and again, like you said, they don't. But even if they did, I'm not even sure it really matters that much. Even the best teams at drafting in Major League Baseball still only hit on like a quarter, if that, of each year's draft picks, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not even that, honestly.
There's so many rounds. Think about it. That's maybe less than that.
And like the rounds, I mean, the rounds have actually been cut down, right? The MLB draft has been shortened in the last, like, I don't know, decade or so.
Since COVID specifically, it's gotten more condensed.
Even more so, yeah. Right? And whereas, like, you know, in the days of Chris LaRue and stuff, when you had, like, guys getting drafted in, like, the 40th round or whatever, right? That, when we're no longer in the days of Chris, right? We're in the days we're at right now. The draft has been vastly curtailed, and you still miss on most of your picks. So I'm just saying, like I'm not sure. For me, it's definitely a good point to bring up, because we know this team. I don't want to call them penny pinchers necessarily, but they do. To Eddie's point, they do take these things into consideration, maybe more than other teams do. Having said that, it should not, in my opinion, shouldn't preclude you from making any sort of deals. So if you had to give up another draft pick to get someone like Lonzo,
by all means,
do it. You know, do it. This is not the time to be cautious with like a third round draft pick compensatory draft pick, I should say.
And here's the other aspect of it as well. For all the people that like to complain, whine about the front office, guess what? You should be urging them to not even think about a draft pick or any compensatory money or whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
Because in 7 years, whenever that pick ends up maybe being something or isn't, they're probably not going to be here. Like, that's just the life cycle of sports in general, show, right? Like, it's the guys that trade three first round picks in a row, but they're not going to be around to see it probably, yeah, anyway. Come on. So make the deal, especially now with how the offseason has progressed, with how this entire regime, the entire tenure of this regime has progressed up until this point. Yeah, just be aggressive. Be aggressive and try and maximize whatever opportunities in front of you. And if that means forfeiting another compensatory pick to pick up Pete Alonso, hey, by all means, I'm not going to sit here and worry about that too much. I have one stat before we take a break.
All right.
It's a fun one. Sportsnet stats delivered this earlier today. The last 3 years, in the last three seasons, Anthony Santander has 198 extra base hits.
Okay.
It's a good number.
Yeah.
Healthy number for a 3 year span. Juan Soto has 198 extra base hits in that same 3 year span. Is Anthony Santander Juan Soto? No. But one guy got $765 million and the other got 92 and a half. That is a bargain. They went bargain hunting, and boy, did they sign one in terms of a guy that can hit for power and provide offense. Anthony Santander, your newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays. You like that one, Joe?
I like that one a lot. I got to say, the Sportsnet stats guys, the social media team, they love cooking up some good stats for the engagement. That's a great one. I got to say, they do a great job. That's one of their better ones, I will say.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, why don't we talk about what might still be ahead? What might happen next? And I actually want to hit on something with you pertaining to this whole runner-up narrative.
Okay.
That has been lingering for multiple years now, but seemingly has reached like a fever pitch this offseason. I want to hit on that with you. And, of course, phone line still open. Text line open as well, 590-590. Happy to get more of your feedback on the Anthony Santander signing. Daniele Franceschi, Show Ellie with you right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, it's Blake Murphy.
And I'm Matt Bonner.
Join us weekday mornings at 11 as we break down all things Toronto Raptors.
It's the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, final segment, Sportsnet Today. Special Blue Jays edition of Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Daniele Franceschi, Show Ali with you. Again, the Blue Jays making quite the splash today in free agency, picking up Anthony Santander. It's official, 5 years, $92.5 million, guaranteed, opt out after the third year, club option for the sixth season, which would push the overall value of the deal to $110 million and makes it the third largest deal, the third largest commitment to a free agent in Blue Jays franchise history. I know, Show, the text line is very busy.
Yes, it is.
So let's mix in some reaction, and you can take it away, my friend.
Well, there was a text here, actually, just because you just mentioned it, the third largest free agent deal ever. So, of course, Springer and then Gausman, 1 and 2. This is number 3. And I think that's an important distinction, the biggest free agent deal. Because someone had texted in to say, Wells was more than that, no? And Vernon Wells did get a bigger number and years. His extension was 7 years, $126 million, but that's what it was. It was an extension. It wasn't a free agent deal.
Barrios would be the same.
I think he technically would be up there too, right? I think it would be more, but it's because they were extensions and not free agents deals is why this does not technically qualify.
Barrios, 7 years, $131 million.
There you go, right. So
extension after the trade.
Extension. So that's why I think that's really the only reason, right? Otherwise, you're right. If we're talking about like just dollar deals handed out, you'd be talking about those guys above Santander, but that's where we are. We're talking about free agent deals. So not a lot of big-time free agent commitments by this franchise. Let's look at some of the texts, though. Ian in Ridgeville says, love the signing. Still need a pitching improvement, however, which I think is fair. You know, it depends on how much you believe in certainly Bowden Francis, and I guess to a lesser extent, Yariel Rodriguez. So the way the season ended, I think a lot of people would agree that Francis is in the rotation, Y-Rod is not. But still, I would agree with Ian. There's a text here from... this is a good question, actually. Jared from Baxter. Hey, guys, I understand all the hype with Vladdy and his extension, but it's been awfully quiet about Bo. What do you think about a contract extension for Bichette this offseason? You know what? That's so typical.
That's really interesting.
It's tough to value because, A, he had the literal worst season of his entire career. And then on top of that, shortstops just tend to test the open market. Like, how many shortstops do you remember that were as young as or even close to as young as Bo sign extensions? Like, most of them go on and sign big time free agent deals. Like, look at what Willie Adames just did, right? I know he is a little bit older than Bo, but he just signed a big time money deal. If you want to go back, Trey Turner signed a big money deal.
Corey Seager,
right?
And Seager left the Dodgers.
Dansby Swanson, right?
Yeah, I
mean,
Dansby,
not too
right.
long ago. And I mean, if you want to get a little older, Xander Bogaerts did, and Lindor did. All of the top shortstops tend to test free agency, and I don't really see it being that different for Bo, unfortunately.
Yeah, so from an asset management perspective, if you, as a front office, if you genuinely believed in the player, if you were convinced last year was a total aberration and you are fully invested and you still believe, hey, when Bo is right, Bo is genuinely one of the best players at his position, specifically from an offensive standpoint.
For sure.
This would actually be the most opportune time to explore it. From the team standpoint. Yeah. If you're the player, I get it. You've already, think about it, right? You're now coming off the worst year of your career, statistically speaking, injury riddled, and you're 1 year away from free agency. It does not behoove Bo Bichette to go and say, you know what? yeah, let's talk about it now, when they can sit in front of you at a negotiating table and say, well, your guy just came off a really, really tough year. Really tough year.
I mean, I would like it, and the Blue Jays would like it.
Exactly.
But I don't think Bo would like it.
I don't think Bo's signing up for that.
No, I don't think
it is noteworthy, Show, and I know you mentioned this earlier when we were taking calls. You mentioned the fact that, you know, Bo was among the small contingent of players that were here to help make the pitch to Roky Sasaki a couple weeks ago.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Him, Chad Green, Dalton Varsho, and Varsho obviously still under team control, and he's going to be a Blue Jay. Chad Green, elder statesman, guy with plenty of experience. Bo being that guy with the most credibility, frankly, because, yeah, for years everybody knows around baseball, Bo is one of the pillars. It's him and Vlad. It wasn't Vladdy that was here. It wasn't Vladdy that was utilized as part of the Juan Soto pitch either. A guy that he's friends with. Like, there's a personal relationship there. Now, in that situation as well, Bo wasn't utilized. He wasn't present. He wasn't talking to Juan Soto behind closed doors, as far as we understand. But it is interesting that he was here. Rare that you would find that for a guy that is, in theory, going into a lame duck season where he's already maybe forecasting, hey, where am I going to be in 12 months?
Sure.
What does my market look like? What type of season? I got to be focused on having the best season I can so I can drive up my value. I don't know. I think 12 months ago, if we turn the clock backwards, right, what were the conversations being had on our station, on this network?
Like before this past season.
Across baseball. Right. It was Bo Bichette is probably the guy that is the face of the team, and maybe you feel more comfortable committing to him long term than you do Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Fast forward 12 months to where we are now, and here we are saying, gosh, pay Vlad all the money. Do it all. Anything. But I don't know that there's going to be any progress or something tangible is going to happen. It is an interesting question posed by Jared, though, when it comes to, you know, Bo. And if it is truly case closed, open shut, that there's no realistic pathway for him to continue here. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that question.
I do think there is a chance he resigns here, but I'm with you that he's not doing it before the season starts. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way. I think there is a very slim chance that Vladdy does it before the season starts, because we kind of know what he's asking for, we being the team, we being the media, we being the fans. But when it comes to Bo, we're not really sure what he's asking for collectively. And also, to your point, he'd be bargaining from a position of weakness, right? So I think that's the case. I think if he gets off to a tear, maybe the Blue Jays are just like, you know what, let's keep him. And they give him whatever he wants. Right? Like, it's possible that happens. It's unlikely it happens, but it's possible. Whereas I don't think he's not doing it now, because they have no real, I mean, they would know better than anyone else because they see him, but there's also no real way to know what his production would be like in a game, because it ended so miserably for him. And then he came back and he fractured his thumb right away or whatever it was. Like, it was just a snake bit year for injury. And I just don't think you're not really sure how that your body reacts until you actually like get back into games, essentially.
I think it's become abundantly clear. Vladdy has established this deadline.
Right.
It's a self-imposed deadline. He's the one that's gone out publicly and said, this is it.
Right, right.
That's the day.
And he's also said, like, I've given the team a number, right? If they meet the number, it's
we'll
done.
Do it.
We'll do it. It's over, right?
Which is important. It's important context. I think Vlad will be true to his word. Date hits. All right. Not that he completely precludes them from keeping him after the season is done, obviously, but I think it diminishes their chances significantly. With Bo Bichette, he strikes me as a guy that, let's say he has 2.5 really good months, things are going swimmingly. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, out of left field, I can already envision, here's all of a sudden a deal with Bo Bichette.
Yeah.
It's possible. It is possible. Whereas with Vlad, I don't see that whatsoever.
I see what you mean.
Right? I think with Vlad, it's all about everything reaches a fever pitch, deadlines force necessitate action, and that's how we're going to get a resolution. Whether it's February 18th or October, whatever, that's when we're going to figure it out. That's when we're going to learn. But with Bo, I think it'll be completely different. I think it could be one of those scenarios where something happens that we don't necessarily fully anticipate. Maybe and in that variety, yeah, it could be a contract extension. I don't preclude them from doing that at any point.
Let me squeeze in a couple more texts here before we get out of here. Derek and Barry says, adding Santander and his 40-plus home runs will be nice protection for Vladdy. Now I want the Jays to sign Alonso so badly, also because his nickname is Polar Bear, and then we could put Vladdy at third base. I actually didn't know his nickname was Polar Bear.
Oh, you didn't know that?
I did.
That's great.
It's a pretty great nickname, actually. It's definitely a
Polar Bear Pete.
It's a point in his favor, I would think. There's a text here from Brad in Nova Scotia taking the other attack. I am not excited if Bo bounces back, if this, if that. This is just a Band-Aid on a chainsaw accident. That's a great analogy. A little grim, Brad, but I think that is a pretty that's a pretty great analogy. Let's see. Sterling from Barrie says, gotta love that low-hanging fruit. I'm thinking of Dumb and Dumber. Just when I was ready to give up on Atkins and Shapiro, they totally redeemed themselves. Go Jays. Extend Vladdy, sign Alonso, and sign Matthew Knies. I assume he means for the Leafs. And not the Jays, although maybe he wants the Jays to sign Matthew Knies as well. I mean, I don't know. Matthew Knies is a big boy. He probably could hit some dingers. And this one is, this is Jim from Stratford. He says, mm-hmm. Alonso, he gives a contract suggestion.
Sure.
2 years, $54 million, opt out after 1 year. What do you guys think about Addison Barger? I think there's big upside power-wise there. I'll say this. That's not a bad suggestion for Alonso, but 2 years, $50 million more, probably won't cut it given what we've heard he already has turned. I know that's more money per year versus what he turned down from the Mets, but it sounds like he's looking for a commitment that is closer to what Santander got, either year-wise or money-wise. So if that's the case, I don't think $54 million is going to cut it. But I can't help but think that if Alonso does sign with someone, like Mets, Blue Jays, someone, it will be not incentive-laden, but opt-out-laden, much like a lot of these contracts that were signed last year looked like. So maybe that will be the case and then they just do it all over again, but apparently he's trying to avoid that, so we'll see. What do you think about Jim's question about Addison Barger though?
Very intrigued by Addison Barger, because when we see him, he looks like a ball player, right? The arm plays, whether it's at third or in the outfield. I tend to like him better in the outfield. But the bat, it's such a violent, aggressive swing, and you're just thinking, man oh man, if he makes contact, this thing is going 450. But it's the problem is making the contact consistently. Yeah. There's potential there. There's raw ability. And he's younger than some of the other younger guys, true. Right? It's always, that was our running joke last year, that younger guys, because they're not like young. But he is one of the younger members of that group that we talked about a lot last year. So there is upside. And right now, based on how the roster is constructed, there would be an opportunity for him. Certainly opening day rolls around because there's no Varsho, and that's one fewer spot. And now you're getting into the, you know, you have to view that outfield situation through the prism of your Loperfitos, your Bargers, your Schneiders of the world.
Miles Straws of the world.
Oh, geez. He might start center field opening day. I'm not even joking.
I don't think that's a joke.
Yeah, it's not a joke. He might be standing and patrolling center field. He does play a decent outfield and he can run. Ah, gosh, I'm not trying to make it redeeming at all.
We're too far from talking ourselves into Miles Straw starting on opening day. It's only the end of January. We have plenty of time for that.
That's true. The other thing I did on that point, the other end of his point, obviously Barger, but Alonso and the deal. If the Jays display a willingness to provide that security with term, they're in it. And I think that's where, unlike some of the other players, specifically like Roky Sasaki, where he was taking his pick of the litter,
right?
It's different. And sure, it's a big bargain because you're not spending all the money, but you're not in a position of major leverage and power. This is different because if you really want the player, well, yeah, do what you just alluded to, show. And BNS actually just had an updated report on the Santander signing. He says there's heavy deferrals in the deal.
Okay.
So if you do a deal like that, where it's, again, 5 years, heavy deferrals, and make it flexible, sign me up. Sign me up, because those players right now are more invested in the security. That's what they want. Yeah, that's why signing the 22 a year with the Mets.
Yeah, and I think, too, I mean, BNS had also tweeted this out right after the Santander news was announced, but the Santander deals pushes the Blue Jays' 2025 payroll above the second CBT threshold of $261 million, and he's saying it's approximately $263 million at this point. Like, in for a penny, in for a pound at this point. You know what I mean? Like, if you're committing to being that a team in terms of payroll, then you might as well. Right, like you're already committing a lot of dollars to being spent here. So if that's the case, then you might as well stay above that threshold, sign someone like Alonso, and then if it doesn't work out, do what they did last year and tear it down and trade all the guys who are expiring at the deadline. That's going to be a conversation we're having if things go south. But I'm with you. I think the Alonso signing or the potential of an Alonso signing to add on to the Santander signing would be a good place for this team to continue.
Listen, all I know is it's been a good day. Today is a good day for the Toronto Blue Jays. And they haven't had a lot of wins over the last couple of off seasons. It's nice to get a win.
Finally.
Like, there's still more work to be done, and it doesn't excuse a lot of the missteps and the failures.
I'm with you.
But you know what? That's okay. fans can go home tonight. If you're driving home right now or you leave work at 5, you're going to go home and you're going to feel excited for once. And that's a great place to be.
I agree, man.
Show, this has been a great place to be. Thank you so much.
This is a quick hour.
Yeah, very quick. Show, great stuff. Thank you to Mark Balfour, our producer. Thank you to Derek Brandeo behind the glass. Be sure to download this episode. It'll be on the Jace Talk podcast feed. Appreciate you all listening. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Show Ali, Daniele Franceschi, signing off.